You're listening to The Jewish Truth Bomb with Lenny Goldberg.
Hey, this is Lenny Goldberg, and thank you for joining me today. Last week, we saw in the headlines that Benny Gantz was urging the government to conscript the ultra-Orthodox Jews, the Haredim, because, as he says, we're in a war, and we need all available manpower. And to quote him directly, he said like this, "Manpower strains on the army during fighting in Gaza and on the northern border require the contribution of all sectors of society, making the exemption that Haredi men receive in order to study in yeshivas impractical." Okay, so as we know, most of the ultra-Orthodox Jews, the Haredim, they don't serve in the army. And Gantz was saying all last week that it's impractical now. We need everybody to serve. We have a shortage of manpower. And what really made the headlines was the response from the Chief Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef. This is what he said in response to Gantz wanting to, you know, conscript the ultra-Orthodox. He says like this, "If the state forces us, that is the ultra-Orthodox community, to go to the army, we'll go abroad. We'll leave the country." And the rabbi declared that those who learn Torah must not be drafted under any circumstances, no matter what. And again, if yeshiva students are forcibly enlisted, the Haredim are just going to go abroad. And what he said was totally backed by the Torah parties of Aguda and Shas. And now I'll quote what they said. "Without the Torah, without the kolels, without the yeshivas, the army will have no success. It's Torah study that has sustained us through thousands of years of exile. We have no right to exist as a nation, God forbid, in the land of Israel without Torah scholars engaged in full-time study." And so that's a major argument of the Haredi community, that it's bitul Torah. Serving in the army takes time from learning Torah. And what's also important to them is that you put a ultra-Orthodox soldier in an environment of the army, he could be led astray, which is true. Anybody who served in the army could attest to the fact that there's a lack of anything sacred in the army. There's a lack of morality, especially with the women soldiers all over. Now, before I get into the halachic aspect of it, what does Jewish law say about all this, about conscripting Torah learners to the army? First of all, before we get into that, first of all, you have to understand where the secular left and Benny Gantz are coming from. You see, for decades, they've carried on an obsessive attack on the Haredi community. The way they dress, that they're parasites, they're aggressive, they keep to themselves, all the stereotypes. So you have to know the background of this dispute. A lot of lies and defamations and hate towards the Haredi community. But, there is one point that the haters have seized upon, which always strikes a responsive chord in many a Jew in Israel, even amongst those who are traditional and not anti-religion at all. And that's the question of army service for yeshiva students. That was always a hot issue in Israel. The subject of drafting the Haredi yeshiva students, that's always been one of those sizzling debates in Israel for a long time. It's an issue that always leads to a lot of anger and antagonism on the part of many Jews who aren't necessarily against Torah learning. So this is a powder keg issue. The fact that the sons of some Jews are fighting in Gaza and risking their lives while others don't, that's an explosive issue that leads to a lot of bitterness, especially when you have the left and the media and the Torah haters fanning the flames. And so before I get into what's really going on behind the scenes and why this suddenly has come up, first, let's get down to the halacha of it. What is the Jewish law about conscripting yeshiva students? Well, let's open like this. It has to be clear. There's nothing more important for the Jewish people than the study of Torah. We know that it's upon Torah study that Israel and the rest of the world rest. And Torah scholars are more important to Israel than any other category of professionals. And it doesn't matter that the secular Jews don't get it, that they don't appreciate the importance of Torah study. It says in the Talmud, in Masechet Megillah, that the study of Torah is greater than honoring one's parents. And in Perkei Avot, it says, the study of Torah is greater than the kahuna or the malchut. So first of all, we have to establish that Torah study is critical to our survival. The whole question is this: what does the scholar, The guy who's learning Torah, what does he do in the times of a Milchemet Mitzvah? What's a Milchemet Mitzvah? It's an obligatory war. It's a communal mitzvah upon which the future of the Jewish people depend. That's a Milchemet Mitzvah. And of course, our war with the Arabs is clearly an obligatory war. It's Milchemet Mitzvah Pshita. Nobody can argue that. Okay, so having said that, that we're in a Milchemet Mitzvah, this is what the Rambam says, and he brings it from the Talmud. In an obligatory war, everyone goes out to battle, even the bridegroom from his room and the bride from her canopy. So we see here that everybody has to participate. But it also says that when it comes to those scholars who do nothing but learn Torato Umunato, that is their sole occupation, is learning Torah. They never leave the tent of Torah. Somebody like that may be exempt because he's irreplaceable. The generation needs his Torah. And so, yeah, there are exceptions. People like that may be exempt. But the thing is, not everyone who wishes to claim such a title that his Torah is his profession, not everybody is worthy of that title. You can't claim that Torah is your sole occupation and cloak yourself in the mantle of being such a person just to avoid going out to war. What's clear, though, is that a student who doesn't devote his entire time to Torah study, it's not his sole occupation. He's not constantly immersed in Torah study. He studies, but he also works. He does other things. He's obligated to participate in a Milchemet Mitzvah. In other words, if you can find time to work, you can also find time to fight, to defend the land, and sanctify Hashem's name, because that's what a Milchemet Mitzvah is. Okay, so now I've explained it from a dry halachic point of view. But what's going on here with Gantz and the leftists and their recent attack on the Haredi yeshivas, you have to look at the bigger picture. You have to see what's going on politically. You have to see their angle. And that's why you listen to my show. Let me explain what's really going on here. The same week that Gantz and the other leftist leaders made those statements about the Haredim, that they should do the army, what did Yoav Gallant do, the Sar HaBitachon, the Minister of Defense, what did he do during that time? He goes and pays a visit to the Eli Pre-Military Academy. Eli, by the way, is right near me in Tapuach, and they have a huge machina, a pre-military academy. It's a Zionist learning institution where the boys study Torah, and then they go to the army. And Yoav Gallant goes there. He meets with his students. He speaks there. He discusses the importance of serving the IDF and of balancing religious obligations with national service, like these boys do. So it's not for nothing that his visit comes during this fierce debate over the military draft exemptions that members of the ultra-Orthodox community enjoy. You have this huge debate going on, and that's where he decides to visit the machina in LA, meeting with the students and the teachers and the rabbis, and he hears about all the graduates of the school who have fallen in the war against Hamas in Gaza. And Yoav Gallant is there praising the yeshiva where the boys learn Torah, and they also fight. And of course, these pre-military academies, they give him a lot of kavod, a lot of honor. They're kissing up to him. I mean, they might have wanted to ask him, why are Jews like Ariel Danino and other hilltop youths still in prison? And why has he exhibited such hostility towards the settlers? They didn't ask him any of that, but that's not the point. Why did he visit them? Because he's very cunning. He doesn't care about the visit. He knows what the news headlines are going to be the next day following his visit. What's going to be the headline? And believe me, headlines are the only thing that concerns these politicians. And here's the headline in the Times of Israel last week. Gallant at the Eli Pre-Army Academy says, students here are proof that one can study Torah and still serve in the IDF. And that's the headline that Gallant wanted. He makes that special trip to the Machina in Eli to compliment the Shiva boys who combine their Torah and their army service. Why did he do that? Listen closely. He did it to distinguish them from the Haredi yeshivas who don't combine their learning with their army service. He wants to place a wedge between these two communities, between the Haredi yeshivas and the Zionist yeshivas, because he knows that when they're united, they give the nationalist camp its political power. And so after bashing the Haredim who don't serve, he comes to the religious yeshivas who do serve, and that way he's drawing them into this whole controversy. and all this political tumult. He's entangling them in the turmoil. He's getting the yeshiva people all caught up in the dispute. Now, this subject of Haredi serving, the yeshiva guys who serve, they don't really care that much about it. I mean, they might not agree. They think the Haredim should serve. But if you asked any of these religious army guys in learning there, do they want to get involved in this controversy? They would never agree to the message that Yoav Gallant is trying to put out there. So he is using them in a cynical and sinister way. He's not interested in the Jewish halacha, obviously, that in a milchemet mitzvah, in a mandatory war, everybody goes out. He wouldn't know a milchemet mitzvah from a bar mitzvah. That's not where he's coming from. And how do you know that they're full of it when they criticize the Haredim for not serving? Because those who are bashing the Haredim for not serving, those are the same people who for months, during the demonstrations against judicial reform, they've been encouraging people to refuse to serve in the army. They've been encouraging everyone not to serve in the army, to refuse army service. These are people who did huge damage to the IDF. They tore the country apart. They went overseas to mobilize opposition against their political enemies. Now, it does make sense that there's a shortage of manpower. I know kids who have been in Gaza for 4 straight months without a break. On the other hand, I know a couple of good Jews who don't serve in the army for one reason or another. Some got an exemption because they were arrested on national issues, or the Shin Bet decided that they're dangerous and they can't serve in the army, and they don't serve. But when the war broke out, the war in Gaza, they wanted to enlist. They want to help out because, you know, it really is hard to sit around when your house is on fire, when you see your fellow Jews dying in battle and you go to their funerals, they're fighting and serving and sanctifying God's name. So it's natural to want to feel that you also want to do something other than just continue your routine. So some of these guys, they requested that they be allowed to serve and they were turned down. Why? Because of their views, because of their past arrests. So what I'm saying is, if the problem was just a lack of manpower, why not take these kids into the ranks of the IDF? Now, every time this subject comes up about the yeshiva boys not serving and the exemptions and so forth, there's something else that has to enter the discussion here if we're talking about the IDF and joining the IDF and all that. And that question is, what kind of army should we have? Should it be a Jewish army, like the army of King David and Bar Kokhba and the Maccabees, who wipe out the enemy? Or we're going to be an army run by the gentilized Hebrews of Gallant and Gantz, an army with perverted war ethics, an army that endangers its own soldiers in order to save so-called innocent civilians? Shouldn't that also be part of the conversation? Because I know a lot of young men who would love to fight for the Jewish army if it was normal. Because if we were normal and went out to battle to actually win, a lot of people who are turned off by the way the IDF fights a war, this would give them motivation to join. Now, during this Gaza war, there's a lot of motivation. Everybody sees the need for it. But in the past, a lot of young men didn't want to serve because they see the IDF as a punching bag and not doing what it should. And we're not going to even talk about the fact that the IDF was used as the military arm of leftist policy to throw out Jews out of their homes. So that puts a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of young, strong, normal Jews who are turned off by how the IDF goes about things. And so again, this also has to be part of the discussion. Every time we're talking about whether the Haredim should serve and not serve, why don't they do the army? Let's talk about another thing. What kind of army is this anyway? So if you're angry about the Haredim not going to the army, does that anger you more than the fact that the IDF hasn't yet conquered Rafiah? And if the issue of the ultra-Orthodox not serving in the army, if that upsets you more than the army's leadership screwing up on October 7th, you might want to check yourself. And so the point is, the only thing that matters in this war is the absolute crushing of the Arab enemy in Gaza and anything else. All that other stuff is a distraction. It's the way of the swamp of manipulating public opinion and get us off the scent of what's really important, that these military generals have failed us big time. And they use the Haredi issue, which with all the controversy surrounding it is not as significant an issue, and they use it as a smokescreen to divert attention from the true matter at hand. So don't let them fool you. And when they start their Haredi bashing, just don't pile on, because you have to know where they're coming from. Moving on to something else, we saw a couple of days ago that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, he warns that Israel risks becoming a pariah, and he's calling for new elections. He's calling for new elections. Oh, God. Anyway, he strongly rebukes Netanyahu, using very strong language against Bibi Netanyahu. Now, there's a tendency for us to really get behind Netanyahu because really everybody's against him. All the Jew haters hate Netanyahu. And by the way, Chuck Schumer is not a Jew hater, but he's a classic quivering ghetto Jew. But all the leftist Jews and all the Jew haters out there, they hate Bibi. He is the biggest hawk, the biggest warmonger in their eyes. And that naturally makes us want to support Bibi Netanyahu. And so we're thinking that if these Jew haters hate him so much, he must be doing something right. Well, yeah, he does have a little bit of a Jewish feeling. He's got a little Pindle Yid there, if you compare him to Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid. But, you know, sometimes you just have to use the sechel and not the regesh. You know, you have the sechel, which is your intellect, and you have the regesh, which is your emotion. And out of emotion, we like Bibi. Because again, all the anti-Semites hate him. But if we use our sechel a little bit, and that's what we should be using, we have to realize that Bibi's been in charge. He's been the prime minister for how long? 100 years. And he's never taken the bull by the horns. He's never pulled the trigger on anything. He's missed the hesitancy. All he knows how to do is to get reelected. Right before every election, he becomes Rabbi Kahana. Yeah, he really starts talking that way. Days before the elections, he's campaigning. Don't let the Arabs determine who's the prime minister. Come out to vote. He's talking like Kahana. He's speaking strong against the Arabs. He's backing Ben-Gvir. He makes himself to be a real right-wing guy. And the minute he gets in, he returns to the old slimy politician he always was. He's constantly dismantling settlements. He's led out thousands of Arab terrorists for nothing as a gesture. He is Mr. Kick the Can down the road. He's the one kicking the can all these years, not solving problems, not taking the bull by the horns. I mean, think about it. Israel is in big trouble on all its borders. Who allowed the Hamas to build the city of tunnels under Gaza, letting them arm themselves up to the teeth? So despite the perception in the outside world, he's a weak leader. Yeah, he makes great speeches in Hebrew and in English, but that doesn't make you a leader. So just because the world hates Bibi and they call him a warmonger, my God, they call Biden a warmonger for giving aid to Israel. The leftists and the Arabs in America are hounding him, heckling him, saying he's a warmonger, he's helping Israel. So what does that mean, that Biden is really good for Israel? Because these Arabs and these freaky students on campus say he's good for Israel? We know what Biden is. We're going to vote for Biden now over Trump because people hate Biden, that he's helping Israel too much. So you got to use your sechel. The people in Israel keep voting right wing and they keep getting leftist policies. And that's Bibi's fault. I want to play for you now Jonathan Pollard. He was speaking with Rav David Bar Chaim from Machon Shiloh. And I can listen to Jonathan Pollard all day. I mean, if he was giving the weather forecast, I would probably tune in. And so we're going to play for you a short segment where Jonathan Pollard is describing a conversation he had with Benjamin Netanyahu.
When I talked to him when he was out of office, he called me in and I was sitting there talking to him and he said, I've heard what you've said about Jenin, that we have to go in and clean them out and basically destroy the city, evacuate the people and then destroy the city. He said, you know, you remind me of somebody that we have to let out of the cage every once in a while to do the dirty work, but then we have to put him back in the cage. And I looked at him and I said, first of all, I'm not an animal to be let out or returned to a cage. More to the point, all these seemingly intractable problems that you think I would be able to solve are due to you. You have been in power more than almost any other prime minister. You allowed these problems to fester to the point where they are almost intractable, except for someone like me to come along and correct them. And I mentioned Hezbollah and his allowance of them to build up their rocket force to the point where it has the same, could have, chas v'shalom, the same effect as a nuclear strike on Israel.
That was Jonathan Pollard in a conversation he had with Bibi Netanyahu. And it's true that Bibi had a hand, actually, in Pollard's release, and Jonathan Pollard is grateful to him for that. But that doesn't mean he's going to give Bibi a pass. And it's likely that Bibi helping to get Pollard out was probably like a political move. He knew that the Israeli people really wanted it. Otherwise, he probably would let him rot. Because as a rule, he'll only do something that's to his political advantage. But that's just speculation on my part. Okay, so next week, exactly, is Purim. And we're going to talk a lot about Purim then. But I want to skip over Purim for a moment and talk about Passover. Because it's getting late to order the Haggadah of the Jewish Idea by Binyamin Zev Kahana. And if you're not living in Israel, the mail is slow. So you have to order now. Email me at LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com. LennyGoldberg40, the number 40, at gmail.com. It's $25 for the book. The postage is another $20. But don't think about money this time, because price is not an issue when we are talking about a Haggadah commentary that will make your Seder real. Because this Haggadah gets into the tachlis of what Passover is. Passover is a holiday of redemption, vengeance, Kiddush Hashem, Misirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice. The whole point of this Haggadah, and what makes it special, is it teaches us how to bring the redemption in our days. Because the sages teach that one learns about the final redemption from the first redemption out of Egypt. That's our model. And so this Haggadah is more than just nice vorts at your Seder table. And concerning the Haggadah, I mentioned last week how Binyamin Kahana was harassed by the authorities and under pressure to finish his commentary before getting arrested or having everything confiscated. But in this English version that we translated, we took our time. We didn't have the authorities breathing down our necks like he did. And so we really had the luxury of taking our time and making it really nice. And so this will be your go-to Haggadah with wine stains and matzah crumbs in it. That's okay. So order right now. Email me at LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com and give me your address and I'll get this Haggadah out to you before you even pay for it. How's that? When you receive it, then you can pay me. That's it for me. If you want to hear my shiur on Tanakh, we're in the book of Shmuel for an unfiltered shiur on the Bible. Tune into Lenny Goldberg's Bible Classes. Lenny Goldberg's Bible Classes. You can Google that. It's a podcast on Spotify and other platforms. The whole world is waking up to the truth of the Bible. It's time that Jews did as well, because after all, we're the people who wrote it through, of course, the divine inspiration of God. But it's we, the Jewish people, who are featured in the Tanakh. We're the stars. Where else are you going to learn about authentic Jewish leadership, if not in our Holy Bible? Find out the difference between Yoav Gallant and Yoav Ben Tzruya. So I'll be back next week with a special Purim broadcast. You know, they say Purim, it's the holiday of the Kachniks. The Kahana followers love Purim because it's a holiday of vengeance. But you know, you think about it, every holiday is a holiday of vengeance. Hanukkah, Passover, we drowned the Egyptians. On the seventh day of Passover, we have a special Yontiv. So what do you mean Purim's the holiday of the Kachniks? Every holiday is. Wouldn't it be more accurate to simply say that Judaism is very focused on vengeance against evil? As the sages say, as long as evil prevails in the world, the Kodesh Baruch Hu does not sit on his throne. And God willing, we'll talk all about that next week.